Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text 34. This is one of the Chatur Stoti verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's Chatur Stoti verse number 2. And the Chatur Stoti verses are the essence of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, so attacked, and we'll just do a little unpacking exercise. For background purposes, the Srimad Bhagavatam is a rendering of Vyasadeva's realization as he was instructed by Narada. That realization is described in Canto 1, Chapter 7, verses 5 through 7, something like that. And the verse that we're discussing this morning from the Chaturstoki verses has its counterpart in those Chapter 7, Canto 1 verses, where the illusory energy is being described. Yaya samovito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. Paropi, even though the living entity is para, just like we know from Bhagavad Gita, para prakriti. Chapter 7, Bhagavad Gita. Aparayamitas tvanyam prakritam vidime param jiva bhuta mahabaho. Krishna has described his material energies. There are 8. Vina, prakriti, ashtada, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. These 8 comprise my separated energies. And Krishna describes his para prakriti, his transcendental energy. The next verse, aparami trust from yam prakritim vinime param jiva bhuta mahabaho. The living entity is para prakriti. Chapter 7, Bhagavad Gita. In Chapter 7, Canto 1, Bhagavatam, the living entity is also called para prakriti. It's not. Even subtle matter is not. Mind is not conscious. Mind, the material element, mind, is inert matter. Animated and appears to be conscious because of consciousness, because of the presence of the soul. Mind is not conscious or consciousness. Intelligence is not conscious or consciousness. Well, ego is not. Subtle body is not. It's a covering of the soul. And then the soul is conscious. Soul is para prakriti. So, paropi manyate anartam. Although the living entity is para, he takes on this illusory identity because of being bewildered. Yaya sammohita moha. The living entity becomes sammohita, very bewildered by the influence of maya. And under the influence of maya, he thinks himself independent, when in fact he's not at all independent. But he thinks himself independent and is convinced of it and keeps striving like a donkey to be independent. And that's illusion. And there are varieties, 36 flavors, 8,400,000 flavors, species, and then there's subdivisions of those species. So, according to the dictates of the modes of nature, the living entity is dancing in illusion, trying to be independent. So, the first of the four Chaturshloki verses dispels that very directly. In essence, the first of the four Chaturshloki verses says there isn't anything that exists independent. The verse says, before the creation, I alone exist. During the period of cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. And after annihilation, guess what? I alone exist. That means the inseparable nature of God and His energy, whether the energy is unmanifest, manifest, or again unmanifest. It's nothing but the Lord and His energy, like He says in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. There's His material energy and His para prakriti, superior energy, and He's the controller of both. Matter and spirit are the controller of both. And matter is not separate from Him. The living entities are not separate from Him. In one sense, He is everything. I alone exist. So the idea of being separate from Him is an illusory idea. And so the next Chaturshloki verse, the one that we're discussing this morning, says, one who sees something existing separately, that seeing, that conscious state, is my illusory energy. It isn't, but it appears to be. If it appears to be, that's my illusory energy. And so in other words, you can't have illusion without God. You can't have darkness without light. Here's the example that's given. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So, by definition, what is darkness? The absence of light. So what's light within darkness? Well, it isn't. Darkness means absence of light. Well, what if there appears that there's some light? Well, that's illusory energy. If there appears to be reality separate from the Supreme, there isn't reality. There isn't anything separate from the Supreme. What to speak of reality? Even illusion isn't separate from the Supreme. What to speak of reality separate from the Supreme? There isn't such a thing. If it appears to be such a thing, that's my illusory energy. Like, you know, happiness independent of God. There's no such thing. But everybody wants happiness in the material world, and largely independent of the Supreme. And they're chasing after it, madly. And that's the illusory energy. That's a gloss. I'll drill down a little bit. The Chaturshloki verses are responses to questions. Here's the question that the second Chaturshloki verse is responding to. Here's the question. This is Lord Brahma speaking to Lord Vishnu. Brahma has some questions. Here's the question. Please inform me how you, by your own self, manifest different energies for annihilation, generation, acceptance, and maintenance by permutation and combination. Upabrimhita is permutation and combination. Like, you know, mixing of things, this enters into that thing. So the energies are distinct, but then they mix with other energies and you get something unique. But that something unique is but a combination of this energy and that energy. It's not anything else. And so the verse begins, Yatatma Maya Yogena. Yatatma Maya, Yatatma Maya Yogena. So Maya is potencies. Brahma is inquiring about the potency of the Lord. How do you do it? How do you take your energies and make stuff happen? Particularly the material stuff, that which you know. And his answer is, he's describing his illusory potency. It's the same thing that Vyasadeva realized when he saw the Supreme Lord and he saw the illusory energy behind the Supreme Lord. That meant it wasn't acting to bewilder him, but under the Lord's control it was behind him. So I'm going to read very briefly from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this verse. You know who is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur? He's one of our great acharyas, great commentators, and here's how his commentary goes. First, I read he's paraphrased the translation of the verse, or that he's translated the verse slightly, uniquely. Here's how. One should understand by Maya, by whose power real objects are perceived through vidya, and false objects are perceived through avidya, in relation to the self. You know from Ishopanishad, it's one of the books that you're teaching, Vidyam cha vidyam cha yas yas tadveyo vayam saha avidyam rityam tirtha. So, mrityu, one can experience deathlessness or the eternal by properly understanding vidya and avidya. That's one of the Ishopanishad verses. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti unpacking that and laying it out for us. There's one energy, like Prabhupada gives the example of the electrician. He's working with electrical energy. And with that electrical energy, one energy, he can make things hot or he can make things cold. Because he knows the science of how to make things hot or how to make things cold with the same energy. Prabhupada uses that example and says that similarly, Krishna has his Maya and it can act to disclose him or conceal him. One is vidya and the other is avidya. And which one experiences, vidya or avidya, is dependent upon one's regard for Krishna. How you see your relationship with Krishna. Krishna explains the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. Yayatam mam prapadyante. Kamsataiva pachamyaham. Prapadyante means as they surrender unto me, as they have their regard towards me, their submission towards me, their relationship with me, as they have that, so they experience vidya or avidya, and in degrees. Everything is centered on our relationship with Krishna. How do we regard Krishna in a very personal way? And depending upon that, we're under the influence of the Lord's vidya potency, or we're under the influence of the Lord's avidya potency. And we'll see things differently because we're dependent. Those who are recognizing their dependence, they'll see Krishna. There's those that are not, they're unwilling to acknowledge their dependence. They don't see Krishna. They don't see reality. But they see something that doesn't exist, like happiness apart from Krishna. And they go chasing after it, like the deer chasing water in the desert. Because he sees a mirage. Oh, look at that water, I'm thirsty. And he goes chasing and he dies. So I'll read again. One should understand my Maya, by whose power real objects are perceived through vidya and false objects are perceived through avidya in relation to the self. Just as light reveals objects and darkness hides them. Vidya, avidya. One should understand my yoga maya, by whose power some objects are revealed and some objects hidden from the person who has realized the Lord, just as light reveals objects and darkness hides them. Commentary. The commentary is written as if Lord Vishnu is speaking. It's not, the voice is not Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explaining this is what the Lord means. He's restating what the Lord, it's Lord Vishnu speaking to Brahma. Paraphrase. Maya, material energy, acts partially favorable and partially unfavorable towards the jiva trying to attain knowledge and realization of Paramatma. When you realize me, Paramatma, then only yogamaya functions. The internal, the vidya potency. Thus, yogamaya acts only favorably for the one who has realized Paramatma. Yogamaya acts differently for one who has not. Since both of these should be defined in the verse, I will impart this knowledge to you. In verse 27, which we read, you have asked about the qualities of Maya and Yogamaya by the phrase, Yatatma, Maya Yogena. I am now getting the answer by taking two meanings to the verse. That's 34, the one we're reading. By this Maya, nothing is perceived except the real object. By the Lord's internal potency, only reality with a capital R is perceived. And the Sanskrit word that's used here is artha. In material terminology, artha means something else. Artha by dictionary definition means that which is desired. So for the materialist, that which is desired is wealth. Because through wealth, I can get sense gratification. It's like dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So artha, and that is economic development. For kama, so dharma that materialists consider, or you know, pious materialists consider that what's the purpose of religion, dharma? The artha. And what's the purpose of artha? Kama. Refined, very nice, sense gratification. High quality sense gratification. Heavenly sense gratification. That's the purpose of dharma. Artha, kama, and ultimately moksha. So this is a very different use of the word, a more literal use of the word than a conventional one. Artha means that which is desired. So that which is desired is reality, truth, substance, not illusion and distraction from the real purpose of life. That's what's desired. So one can experience that One can perceive nothing but that, the real object, by the agency of Krishna's internal potency. That is, only a real object is perceived. And by this maya, there is also another perception without a real object. Illusion. Vidya, avidya. This means that this maya, by this maya, in avidya, real objects are not perceived, but rather false objects are perceived. The liberated and conditioned souls know it as maya shakti, which has two functions, vidya for the liberated soul and avidya for the conditioned soul, existing in relation to the self. Example, avidya. It is like the illumination coming from a lamp. Yatha bhasa, which is directly, yatha bhasa is directly from this text 34. Yatha bhasa. So illumination coming from a lamp. Here's the example. In a house, an existing pot or cloth is perceived because the light of the lamp. But by taking the lamp away, the pot or the cloth, which previously existed, does not become non-existent. So the soul is there, God is there, which can be seen through the agency of vidya, the internal potency. Take away the internal potency. It's not that the soul goes away or God goes away or the reality goes away. It's just not perceived. Like the cloth or the pot in the room when the lamp is taken away and it's dark inside. Instead, a snake or scorpion, that it's not that happiness doesn't exist, but happiness that's connected with matter and disconnected with the soul doesn't exist. Rabbits with horns don't exist. Flowers in the sky, but there is happiness. There is knowledge. And because people have conviction that there is knowledge, they try to place this knowledge inappropriately and pursue it and you know, hope to get knowledge from it. You know, but it's they get a vidya instead. They get this covering of their real knowledge instead. Mayaya pritigyan. Knowledge that's stolen away by illusion. Asarim Baba Mashut. So that's the horns and the flowers example. Yeah.
The main point I was taking from this class is how everything hinges in a relationship with Krishna.
Yes.
And I was appreciating how actually it's the relationship with the devotees, especially those who are guiding us, then that is there, then our relationship with Krishna is also
accessible.
And then everything is clear. So when there is some disturbance or block in that relationship with the body, then as all this thing that you were describing happens, those slip of reality, fear, and all this kind of stuff. My question is, at that point, when I am in a dualistic condition, how to address that situation?
Well, one thing is, step back press the reset button, push that emotional state on hold. Be in this reflective, this is what I'm advocating here, is mode of goodness as opposed to passion and ignorance. Enter into a mode of good, try to enter into a mode of goodness state where the swirl of the material energy doesn't catch you, passion and ignorance doesn't catch you, and you reflect upon Krishna's words. But, you know, like Arjuna, you can think of Arjuna when he was just terribly despondent, describing to you this year about Krishna has gone. But as he was describing about Krishna who had gone, his consciousness again connected to Krishna. He was remembering specifically, I don't know what Krishna did, but specifically what he said. Then he realized Krishna was providing his association in such a way that even in his absence he would be present through his instruction. Our access, and we use the word access to a relationship to Krishna, is not to be replaced by our relationship with the devotees, because the devotees are meant to access us to our relationship with Krishna. You don't like, you know, put Krishna into some in a closet somewhere, and now it's just the devotees. Mm-hmm. Krishna's in the center of the room. Mm-hmm. He's the center of the association of devotees, and the devotees that are our best well-wishers are, you know, bringing us to Krishna. And out of our humility, we may want to just, like, you know, Rupa Goswami or Sanatana Goswami or Gopal Bhatt Goswami, they may want to just be with the devotees and, you know, be in a humble position, but still their relationship with Krishna is strengthened and strengthened and strengthened and strengthened. It's clear that's the objective, relationship with Krishna. Although the mood may be the servant of the servant of the servant, it's relationship with Krishna. It should be that transparent. So, remembering Krishna's words, you can transpose that and say, remember the words of those who have been guiding you, the Vaishnavas guiding you. And that essentially does the same thing. If it's transparent, it takes you to Krishna. And then it's remembering Krishna's words. Just like I've been doing here, you know, there's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's words, and then there's Ishapanishad's words, and there's Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. They're all, you know, the value of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's words is just elucidating, making it very clear what Krishna says. Its value is it brings us to Krishna's lotus feet. At the same time, you know, we're appreciating, I'm appreciating, wow, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is really good at this. He's right there. Because he's right there, he can make it so easy for us to make the Krishna connection. So your question was, what do I do in those moments when I feel pause, reflective, mode of goodness, and in a state of mode of goodness, consider the instructions. The experiences of reality, Krishna's presence, the loving nature of Krishna, and open one's heart to all of those things. With some courage. Another nice example of what to do when that happens is like Dhruva Maharaj and the Yakshas. He was bewildered. But the Brahmanas came and reset, they hit the reset button. They said, wait, Dhruva, remember, you're very dear to Lord Vishnu. He's your protector. You're his devotee. He's not going to abandon you. Everything will be all right. Just fix your arrow to your bow. Go ahead. And he did. And poof, the whole apparition went away. Just like that. Because that's all it is. It's insubstantial apparition. Whether it's the mystic power of the yakshas or the illusory potency of the Supreme Lord. Illusory potency or the yakshas' mystic power, it's an exhibition of illusion, which is the consequence of neglecting Krishna. And you know, we have a long, if not strong, at least long tendency to neglect Krishna. And tendencies repeat themselves, so we get into that tendency thing. So we just, by practice, something else, and something else becomes tendency. Take shelter of Krishna. And it's far easier to take shelter of Krishna from the position of goodness than from the position of passion and ignorance, lamentation and striving for, ardently striving for sense gratification, driven by that desire to be an enjoyer of matter. Or frustrated and bewildered when it doesn't happen according to our plan.
Relationship, it could be in the mode of passion or ignorance.
Sure. Kapila Dev explains that to Devahuti. Devotional service that's mixed. Not only could be, count on it. And our striving should be to come to Shuddha, which is exactly what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying here. So that the Where does speculative knowledge come from? It comes from passion. It doesn't come from goodness. You know, I want to be the controller. I want to figure it out. I want to get it together. So he's saying that knowledge that comes from even sattva-guna, it's mixed with passion. It's not substantial. It's not going to bring us into the Krishna's realm. So it's that step of taking shelter.
Yeah.